The empire Vasili had inherited in the bloody power struggles 22 years before had diminished in size. Half the South Asian peninsula was no longer firmly in control. The warlords carved out their own little empires. China was nearly a third under the control of the fanatical Muabir, the Flame of Allah. Half of Indochina was immersed in mystical Buddhism as more and more monks burned themselves in protest. Everywhere there was resistance. Even Kilov couldn't stop Stalinville from being attacked and practically leveled.
I'm only trying to keep the world together under one power, so there will be no divisions that will again become nations. Nations that will eventually have another world war and finish off our tottering ecology. I am on the Earth's side. I swear it.
His servant appeared, holding the silver tray with his now twice daily hypodermic injection on it.
Rahala, what is in that needle?
Your medicine, sir. This won't take a moment.
My medicine? What's in it? Live cancer cells? A slow poison? Arsenic?
Your Excellency, you don't trust me.
Well, the second half of a man's life is made up of nothing but the habits he has acquired during the first half. Dostoevsky said that. Oh, you, Rahala, are my only friend.
Not so, Your Excellency. The whole world loves you.
Nothing in this world is harder than speaking the truth. Nothing easier than flattery. You and I both know I am despised. But I am a good man. I have little to be ashamed of. It was my destiny to rule the world.
You are doing the best you can. It is all anyone can ask for.
Rahala?
Yes, Excellency.
I don't want my injection. Get me some brandy, and then get me a priest.
But there are no priests. Your Excellency knows that. All religion is illegal.
If they drive God from the earth, we shall shelter him underground. They are there, and you know it. I'm sick of all these amoral functionaries and calculating assassins around me. Get me a holy man!
Sir.
No, Rahala, you are right. There are no real holy men. Tell my phone operator to adjust the transmitter to top secret Omega Scramble. I want Zhabnov. President Zhabnov in Washington. I will save the world as the Earth wants me to. The only way I know how.
Yes, sir.
Zhabnov stirred restlessly as the young girls on either side of him poked him awake. The little drugged girl stirred and smiled wanly from beneath the wet sheets.
Hello?
This is Vasily. Listen to me. Code Potemkin. It's in your personal code book. This is a direct order from the Premier. I know you will carry out your command. Code Potemkin.
Zhabnov stumbled over to his bedroom safe and took out the top-secret Omega-sealed codex. He would enter the code, and the codex would coordinate with Russian satellites to confirm the security of the message. He stood naked by the night table, his huge stomach and small organ casting shadows from the table lamp. The codex revealed a single line written by Vasily himself years ago.
Kilov is a traitor. Eliminate with extreme prejudice.
At precisely 10:30 a.m. the next day, Kilov was walking in KGB Central Denver with his omnipresent elite bodyguards. He saw Yablonsky, one of his most trusted officers, walking toward him, smiling. Yablonsky extended his hand, something he normally didn't do. Kilov saw it as Yablonsky's hand reached for his, a small pointed object concealed in the palm of his hand. Yablonsky's smile instantly changed. Kilov lunged to the side at the last second, and the dart had plunged into a guard's shoulder. Shellfish toxin.
Guards, don't kill him. Take him to the Mindbreaker.
Kilov glanced down at the corpse turning blue on the floor. He turned to another guard.
Get rid of it.
Yablonsky was dragged away senseless. Now they would have a very interesting subject indeed. And he had thought the day was going to be boring. Days later, the expeditionary force reached the foothills of the next range of mountains. Groves of trees, cool shade, and bubbling springs awaited them. They ran to the waterholes, men and hybrids alike pushing aggressively for space to lap up some of the precious liquid. Then they lay back in the shade with a breeze coming down from the mountain ridges ahead of them. Erickson began to set up a small kitchen. They would eat well this evening. Rock got up early the next morning, refreshed from the first good night of sleep for days.
Hey, Slade.
Yeah, Rock.
I'm gonna scout ahead. You guys take it easy. I might not be back for up to a day, so just pull out the cards and rest.
Rock headed through the thick woods up into the foothills of the looming range of mountains, some of which poked into the clouds. He was looking for a passage to the west. According to his map, they were in what had been eastern Utah, and the range ahead was the Uinta Mountains. He pulled out his binoculars and sighted the sheer rock walls ahead. It seemed impassable, but he had to make sure. Rock walked through the meadows and larger hills as he approached the Uintas. The land was thick with life. Rock breathed the afternoon fragrances of the bursting flowers as they opened their petals to the sun and the passing insect, offering drafts of nectar. It always brought a warm feeling to his gut to see life slowly building its way back from the pitted wasteland. He finally reached the lower slopes of the closest mountain. He began to climb, which quickly became much steeper than it looked. After an ascent of nearly 3 hours, Rock reached the peak. The sun was just setting, and it was spectacularly beautiful. Rock could see in every direction at once. Behind him were the flat and dead plains they had just crossed. In front was mist, a blanket of pink, purple, and yellow fogs writhing and covering the land for hundreds of miles. He headed south along the ridge of the Long Mountain until he reached its southern drop. There, far below, there was a way through. A narrow gully, probably once a riverbed, had sliced through the base joining the two mountains. He took out his binoculars. He saw a stone pathway a good 4 feet wide. He couldn't see a trace of lichen or any river life. This gully would save them days. Rock started leisurely down the mountain, swinging back north. He knew he wouldn't make camp until late, but he had traveled many times at night. The darkness was not an enemy. He reached the base of the mountain around midnight. The crescent moon was rising over the pine-tipped hills, making them look furry, covered with a hide of needles and cones. Then Rock came to a large swamp. Roxon moved to the edge of the murky green water and came upon an expanse of quicksand. A bearded man, only his arms, shoulders, and head still free, was being pulled down. He waved his hands wildly, reaching vainly for the shore, trying to grab hold of a branch, tantalizingly close to his reach. Rock carefully advanced to the edge of the quicksand, getting to within 6 yards of the man.
Hold on, I've got a rope.
The big man quickly wrapped two ham hock-sized fists around the rope and began pulling himself out. Rock pulled the cord end over end, slowly dragging the man out of the iron-clad grasp of the quicksand. The going was tough. The stranger emerged only an inch at a time, but at last, the man was free from his hips up. He began slithering across the slimy surface of the sand as Rock pulled. Finally, the man popped free. His terrified face relaxed into a smile as he realized he was out of the muck. Rock continued pulling, and minutes later, the man was pulling himself onto solid ground. He stood up, dripping thick, dark, foul-smelling swamp mud, and looked Rock in the eyes. Roxon was big, 6'3", but this fellow towered over him. Must have been at least 6'8", going on 7 feet, at over 280 pounds. No wonder the man hadn't yelled. The stranger, clad in buckskin clothes and boots, laid a big hand on Rock's shoulder and looked at him with a deep, sincere expression.
I'm Rock. You?
Archer!
The big man walked several steps to a tree and lifted up a strange weapon that Rock had but a vague memory of having seen before. The stock was made of wood and had a large curved bow lying flat at the other end. The man bent down again and picked up a quiver of steel-tipped arrows. The big man mounted one of the arrows along a narrow shaft in the device. He pulled a steel wire back, making the bow bend, and attached it to a hook just behind the arrow. The man pointed the weapon to a tree across the swamp, a good 100 yards away.
Archer!
I see why. I'm glad you're a friend, not an enemy.
Huh?
If I ask you a question, could you nod yes or no to answer? Yes? So, can you talk? But you understand me. Right. Are you from these parts?
The man pointed with his finger beyond the mountains. Then he held up both hands, spreading his fingers, and opened and closed them 3 times.
30 days. You came from there 30 days ago. You have others?
No.
Archer held up a hand with 5 fingers, and then grabbed it with the other fist and squeezed it. Then he pulled open his buckskin jacket and showed a huge scar that ran from his chest down to his belly button. The others had been killed, and he escaped with that wound. Rock hoped he wouldn't meet the thing that got this guy.
And now where do you go?
The man pointed due west.
That's where we're going. And you're welcome to come along. So, you're Archer.
Archer!
Right, Archer. What say you and I head back, and I'll introduce you to everybody else.
It took them another hour and a half to reach the edge of the campsite. Rock knew something was wrong immediately. The fire was too low. Anyway, there should have been 2 fires going. He put his fingers to his lips in a gesture to Archer, and together the men moved forward in a crouch. There was no movement. Whatever had happened was bad. He pushed aside a large bush and looked down the hillside at the wrecked camp. Roxon knew there was no one there. Alive, anyway. He rushed forward, shotgun pistol in hand, with Archer close behind, an immense carter knife in his hand. Rock looked around. Blood on the ground. Their packs had been ripped open. The hybrids were gone. Suddenly he saw a shape behind a tree. He felt sick. It was Harris, his throat slashed from ear to ear. Whatever had taken them off was human. Of that he was certain. Rock looked around the site. Everything of value was gone, but no blood, other than around Harris. Maybe the others hadn't been hurt, yet. He saw a glinting in the dirt and reached down to pick up a knife. It was a primitive, bone-handled knife. Whoever these killers were, they had regressed tremendously. Maybe they were nearby. They hadn't been gone that long. The fire, although down to the coals, had been stoked at least 2 hours before. Rock motioned to Archer, who on his own had pretty much sized up the situation.
Bandits!
Bandits. We've got to save them.
The trail the bandits had left was easy to follow. Bent branches and the hooves of the hybrids spelled out the direction as plain as day. They had only gone about 2 miles when Rock smelled smoke from a nearby fire. Rock and Archer edged up to some bushes on a ridge just 40 feet away from the bandits' hideout. In front of a small, run-down farmhouse, about 20 men, filthy, teeth missing, half without shoes, sat around drinking deep swigs from cider jugs filled with home brew. Rock scanned the entire scene. To the right, his men, tied to stakes, were all still alive. They looked a bit worked over, but Rock didn't see any deep wounds or blood flowing out of severed arteries. Several of the free fighters were unconscious. The rest nervously eyed their captors. Chen stared impassively, waiting.
Let's shoot him now! Garvin, can we kill him now? I'm hungry!
Roxon suddenly noted the stacks of bones behind the woodpile that fed their cooking fire. Cannibals. He looked at Archer, who stared back, unafraid. Rock knew he could trust this man implicitly. Whatever happened now, he had a good fighter by his side. Archer pointed at his arrows and then at Rock's gun.
When I fire,
Archer nodded. He pulled out 8 arrows and placed them in a little wire contraption beneath the stock so that each time he fired, an arrow would release into his firing hand so he could instantly reload. Rock pulled out his second pistol, a snub-nosed nickel-plated 38. The leader of the bandits walked toward the prisoners. The rest of the motley crew rose to their feet and, licking their lips, started toward the imprisoned free fighters. Rock gripped both pistols tightly in his hands. The scum would be upon his men in seconds. It was now or never. The bandits looked around in confusion. Then they saw the two men coming at them, one with a crossbow, the other with 2 pistols. They reached for their own archaic weapons as the 2 intruders came forward. Rock split to the left and Archer to the right to avoid giving them too simple a target. Rock brought his shotgun pistol to bear. At this range, he was taking out 2, sometimes 3, with a shot. To his right, Rock could see Archer shooting away with the crossbow. He took out 3 of them, but they rushed him, and the huge man disappeared beneath a pile of bodies.
Archer!
The Goliath erupted from a mass of bodies, literally heaving the bandits into the air. He reached for his 18-inch knife and began slicing at anything that came near. The bandits were in a state of terror. The white-haired mutant was unreachable. Whenever they charged him, he spun out of their path and blasted out of the world, taking out 2 or 3 of them at a time. The huge one was ripping them apart with each blow. Brown, cavity-ridden bandit teeth littered the dirt. The leader of the cutthroats, Garvin, saw Roxon in the middle of the barrage of death and saw his own men flying out of it, blood spurting from their dying bodies. Already half of his men were on the ground feeding their guts to the earth. His kingdom was crumbling. In a rage, Garvin pulled his own bone-handled knife and ran at the white-haired killer, pushing his way through his own stumbling men. He came from behind, saw the spinning back of the stranger, and lunged forward. Rock felt the wind of the attack, a thousandth of a second before it reached him. The bandit lead sank to his knees as his brains began running like undercooked pudding down the back of his head. Then he fell forward, flat on what had been his face, and never moved again. Rock waded into the remaining group, only 8 now, swinging the machete like a sword. 2 more stomachs were sliced open, their contents spewing out onto the bloody charnel ground. A mixture of yesterday's food and quarts of precious blood from their dying bodies. Rock glanced to Archer, who seemed to be doing fine. Rock turned and saw 2 of the bandits running toward the free fighters, machetes in hand. Evading the pitchfork one of the remaining bandits lunged at him, Rock ignored his own little group of attackers and ran as fast as his legs could carry him toward the prisoners. The bigger of the 2 bandits, intent on finishing off their captives, picked Chen for his first butchering job. He walked up to the diminutive Chinese and, with a twisted grin, raised the machete to deal the death blow. Chen returned the smile, and his untied foot came flying up in the air with the speed of a surface-to-air missile. The second of the cowards walked to Lang, the kid.
At least you die. Yeah. That, you die slow.
Get up.
The bandit reached for his personal weapon, a curved loading hook. He waved it in little circles at Roxon.
Come on, come and get it, white hair.
Rock stepped forward suddenly, and the bandit lunged. Rock jerked back, flipping the bandit through the air, and whipped the hook from the crazed killer as he flew past. Rock moved like a flash, swinging his arm, hook in hand. The hook sank deep into the bandit's throat, exiting the other side of the stubble-covered neck. The bandit's eyes grew wide. Rock pulled his hand sharply back. The bandit's throat ripped out, trailing on the tip of the hook, tendons, windpipe, and larynx, followed by a torrent of blood. He swung his vision back over to Archer, who still battled 3 of the remaining mountain savages. The last one left alive turned tail, but Archer calmly lifted his crossbow, slicked with blood. Rock quickly untied the free fighters. They rubbed their wrists and their bumps and bruises from the bandits' brutal treatment, but they were okay.
Thanks, Rock. What can I say?
Say thanks. What the hell happened? How were they able to take you?
They snuck up on the guards. Somehow got them. I started in on them, but they held guns to Slade's and Perkins' heads, and I just couldn't do anything. Then they tied us up. Harris made a jump for his liberator.
Yeah, I saw Harris.
One of his oldest friends in Century City. A man who had befriended Rock when still a teen, who had taught him much of his woods lore and shown him many of his survival techniques. Harris deserved better. The free fighters walked over to Archer, who was absent-mindedly rifling through one of the corpse's pockets, looking for anything of value.
Who's that?
Just call him Archer. I found him stuck in a quicksand bog around the mountain. He's a super fighter and a good man.
We saw that. Goddamn guy's a whirlwind.
Hey, look over here.
Chen was looking at a long metal trough, his face growing a slightly pale shade of yellow. The trough was filled with bones and the still rotting flesh of recent dinners of Homo sapiens.
It's incredible. Here in America. I wish we could study this phenomenon more. It's really quite unusual for an advanced Western society.
Yeah, Perkins, advanced.
What should we do with the bodies?
Let the mountain have them. They'll be better fertilizer than they were people.